Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up and welcome back to the Kind of Funny Games cast. Of course, I am Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the Nitro Rifle himself, Andy Cortez.
Great afternoon, everybody.
Great afternoon to you as well. And today we're talking about Final Fantasy. So, of course, we needed the return of Michael Hyam. Sorry for scaring you there.
Hey, what to do, baby?
GameSpot's own Michael Hyam.
Hey,
welcome back.
They got me again. Yeah, they got me again. So
I thought I was out.
They pulled me back in. You know, Tam came through, knocked on my door, said, hey, look at this check, though. Who am I to say no to money?
So I get it. I get it, man. How you been?
I've been good. Been busy getting back into the fold of things. It feels like I haven't really missed a beat. I mean, you asked Tam about that. But it feels good to, like, you know, we're doing After Dark again. We're doing that live. Being in an office, that was the number one thing for me too, going back to GameSpot. One of the things that attracted me most about that was that I didn't have to work from home, because I'm a social butterfly. I love being around people. I love, you know, the vibe of the office, and especially working with people that I've worked with for years. Because I go back to the office, it's all the people I've worked with before I left GameSpot years ago. So it's just like back into the fold, man. We're all a little bit older. We're all a bit grown. We got more responsibilities. So it's nice to see that growth elsewhere and also be a part of that again.
Hell yeah, man. You got to love it. It's going to be a great time for video games, whether you're watching over on GameSpot or on Kind of Funny. Summer Game Fest is happening so soon, imminently, some would say. And we're going to be covering the absolute hell out of it. We're sending down multiple people, hopefully, to play some games, do a bunch of coverage. Of course, we're going to be reacting to all of the hopefully amazing showcases we're about to get in the next couple weeks. You can follow all of that on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Search all your favorite podcast services for Kind of Funny, and honestly, just subscribe to all the podcasts, because chances are you're going to want to listen to each and every one of them as we cover all the latest in movie, TVs, video games. Shit's crazy this summer, all right? Zelda's already here. We're already moving on, talking about other stuff. Like, how is that even possible? Oh. All right, early June, in addition to Summer Game Fest, we got Diablo 4, we got Street Fighter 6, we got Final Fantasy 16, right? Yeah. So you are definitely going to want to keep it locked here at Kind of Funny, whether
Zelda's
you want
old podcast. News,
I know, exactly. At this point, it's old news. No. It's old news.
Overrated.
God, that's how you want to start this one, Andy? That's how you want to start this one? But anyways, if you want to support us even further, Patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to go. Just like our Patreon producer Delaney Twining, being on Patreon allows you to get the shows ad free, allows you to watch them live as they are recorded if things aren't embargoed like this episode is, and so on and so forth. If you don't have bucks to toss our way, totally cool. If you're on the Epic Games Store, please use our Epic creator code Kind of Funny, and at no additional cost to you, we get some money, and we really, really appreciate that, and it helps us keep things moving. Again, I can't reiterate enough how much you guys are going to want to subscribe to us here, because the next month is going to be insane. How excited are you for the Summer Game Fest?
Oh, man, this is the perfect time to go back to GameSpot, man. Back in the mix, and that means I'm going to SGF, and we're going to be checking out games, of course. And the wild part, though, is that because, like you said, Diablo 4 is coming out soon, and Final Fantasy 16 is after SGF, but so getting sandwiched by major releases, man, I'm doing other things too, but it's exciting and overwhelming too to be thrust back into that. But yeah, SGF is going to be a fun time. I miss conventions so much. I went to PAX East, talked a little bit about that last time I was on Gamescast. So to have that major event where y'all are going to be there, IGN folks are going to be there, all my friends from like coast to coast are going to be at this event, and so I'm, you know, Giant Bomb Couch is happening, and I'm going to be chilling with them like I used to every year at E3. So SGF, man, no matter like who you watch, whether it's IGN, GameSpot, any other creator you watch, or KF, like, content's going to be coming y'all way.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But enough about all of that, enough about the future. I mean, we're still talking about the future here, but we're talking about, for us, a little bit of the past, because 2 weeks ago the three of us got to go down to LA.
Ooh, yeah.
And we got to play about 6 hours of Final Fantasy 16, one of the longest game previews I have ever done in my life. And I, for one, had an absolutely fantastic time. Of course, very much looking forward to this game. Can't wait to talk about it with you all right here. You have already played before. Mm-hmm. You've been on the show. You've talked about it. So, Andy Cortez, I want to start with you. What are your first overall impressions of playing Final Fantasy 16?
It was really nice that, like, we had a little intermission, Tim. We got to go play in the jungle gym outside. They fed us little juice boxes. It was a long demo. I'm so freaking high on this game. I'll say right off the bat, just because I want to get it out there immediately. I don't want people to, like, maybe skip around and not hear it. I think performance is going to be a big issue. And I'm very, very worried about how this game might perform when it comes to just stability of frame rate. There's a performance mode. There's a visual mode. And performance mode was still pretty not great. That being said, everything happening story-wise, everything feels super dark and serious, and it's awesome, and I'm into everything that we were shown. Gameplay is so damn fun and flashy, and we got to kind of see Clive's abilities near the beginning of the game, and they gave us a bit of a preview near the end when you are kitted out a bit more.
Yeah.
And getting to switch between the lightning to the earth ground power to the fire, like, all of that stuff was just so freaking fun, and once you got the hang of it, you felt like an insane gamer. And the whole time I'm playing, I'm like, man, where's this parry ability at? And it turns out the lightning ability has this cool parry. It just shoots out like a giant shield, and you break their attack. It was just so much damn fun. I do wish that we were able to play a bit more of the sections that were kind of when you are super overleveled. Because I feel like those parts were probably the most fun for me. But once you kind of get the movement down, once you got an idea of what abilities work best in certain situations, I had a freaking blast with it. I think that it can get a little visually overbearing in some moments. It reminds me a bit of playing Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origins.
Particle City.
When you are... Well, not only did that game run at like 680p or something, but in moments when you are maybe needing to read enemies' attacks, there's a shitload of particles and lights in the screen, so it's kind of a bit tougher to decipher what attack is coming at you. But those are small little nitpicks. I think this game is like easily probably going to be in my top five this year, just based on what we've played, based on the vibes, the story, the tone of everything. I feel like it's a much more mature approach to this franchise, and I'm not a big Final Fantasy fan by any means, but I really have enjoyed 7 Remake, and I enjoyed 15 back in the day, and I feel like this is going to absolutely bring it when it comes to action and story and twists and turns that are kind of going to blow your mind.
Yeah. I'll take it next year because you already got to talk about this, you know, and then I want to leave it for the pro at the end to take us home here. But I was absolutely blown away with this game. I had so much fun. I did not want to put the controller down. I usually am the type of person that would not want to play 6 hours a game and then have to replay it again later. Mm-hmm. I'm totally okay with it. I am counting down the days for this game, and that is with Zelda now playing. Like, it is such a wild thing to me that I walked away from that demo, and you were saying maybe your top five. I walked away with being like, if this game keeps up from what I played, I can't imagine it not being my game of the year this year. And then to come out and then play Zelda, I'm like, this is probably going to be the best year of games ever. Like, I just can't believe the level of quality that we're talking about. I love Final Fantasy. I always have. I love Devil May Cry. I love stylish action games. This game is just kind of all of that. Mixed with, you kind of alluded to this, a much more serious tone. You've probably already seen a lot of the comparisons to like the HBO Game of Thrones type stuff, and some people take that in a bunch of different ways. So far for me, I only mean that in the best ways possible from what I enjoy about characters and dynamics and story,
and curse words.
Plot, curse words.
They say bad words.
There's a lot.
A whole lot of bad words, and like a lot more like like, I feel like a lot of Final Fantasy games have kind of like sexual tension or sexual implications.
Oh,
or
they were smashing in like the first. Oh, yeah, you know, is that, I mean, yeah. That's not a spoiler.
Nah, but like, there's a lot of it. It's very Game of Thrones-esque, and like, not in a way that kind of feels like, oh, you're saying fuck for fuck's sake.
It
kind of
feels gratuitous. Like,
I believe this. I believe this world, and I was immediately in for the story, and then the gameplay, like, completely echoing what you were saying, Andy. Like, we essentially played three sections during the demo. Maybe like, I would say 2.5 hours-ish of like the early game stuff, and then 2.5 hours of later game stuff, and then 30 minutes to an hour of like the more open area type stuff. Mm-hmm. But the open stuff, we didn't have too much to be able to do, so I was kind of like, eh, this is fine, whatever. But the early gameplay, I think story-wise, I was so blown away. The later gameplay, the combat, I was so, so impressed by how fun all the different abilities and weapons are to switch back and forth. If you're a fan of Devil May Cry 5, you're going to be a fan of this game. And, like, that's something I never thought I'd say about a Final Fantasy, you know? But I was so impressed with not just the story and combat, like I've been saying, but with the characters. I've been going into this being like, Clive, like, I don't, like, you need to sell me on Clive. I'm still not totally sold on Clive, but the voice acting in this game, I thought, was stellar. The production value of the entire thing, the music, is like,
oh my gosh.
It's so elevated that it just makes the entire experience feel premium in a way that I've kind of been missing from a lot of games recently. Every once in a while, we get something, and I'm like, oh, shit, that's that stuff. This reminds me of that. It reminds me of God of War Ragnarok a lot in that way of, like, wow, how are all of the elements of this game this elevated and kind of working in tandem in a way that is, like, I think this is going to speak a lot louder to non-Final Fantasy fans than potentially any previous Final Fantasy has ever done.
Yep.
The amount of times that Tim and I were sitting next to each other, and the amount of times of like, dude, fucking see it. Like, we just kept on like taking our headphones off and be like, dude, I can't. Oh my God. Like, it was really, really impressive.
Yeah. So, Michael, this is now your second time playing it.
Yes.
What are you thinking?
I am, how do I put this? I'm not higher than I was before, but I'm not lower than I was before. I'm glad I got to see how this game opens, because that was the big question for me, was what is actually the setup here? How is Clive and his brother Joshua, what's their relationship? How does Jill get into the mix? What is his hometown like? Who are our parents, and how are they mixed into the fold? So I'm starting to see a lot of that going on. And by the end of that demo, I was sad that I didn't get to play more, because I was genuinely curious about everything else that's going to happen afterwards. So I think the opening, story-wise, is a very strong setup. A couple things about that, though, I think folks should understand that about the first 4 hours we played, very cutscene heavy. So don't go in and
cutscene heavy.
But personally, that's a good thing. As someone who loves long cutscenes, you know, MGS4. Changed my life in the sense that I have started to appreciate video game cutscenes a lot more, and it definitely leans heavy into that sort of storytelling style.
So I love myself a cutscene.
Hell yeah!
Don't get me wrong, but I'm really, like, because of that, I'm really glad we had 6 hours.
Oh yeah! Like,
after, you know, 40 minutes of you sitting there is about 35 minutes of cutscenes, and you're like, God damn, when am I gonna get my hands back on the sticks?
Yeah, definitely felt that way. Yeah. But it's a good setup. I kind of already understood that, like, this game is going to be dark. I just didn't
rated
know.
Rated M.
Big deal. For sure. They earned that M rating, mm-hmm. for sure. I just wasn't sure how violent and dark it was going to be. There is a lot. I think that, there's... I was kind of surprised that an element of this story has to do with oppression and enslavement. And that's not a story spoiler. That's part and parcel to the story that it's trying to tell with regards to who can use magic in that world, who can use the crystals for resources. So I'm starting to get and understand how the story's coming together, because when I interviewed Yoshi P, he was talking a lot about, you know, the relationship between these different kingdoms, these different civilizations, and their fight over resources. So I'm starting to see, like, okay, that's what's at stake, and this is how they're setting up these battles. This is why they're fighting. This is how they're fighting. And this is how a certain segment of people get caught in the middle. And I don't think I want to get any deeper than that, because it is a little bit shocking that they're going in that direction. Now, as a Final Fantasy 14 player, I have faith that this team can pull it off, because if you've played Stormblood, a lot of that story has to do with oppression and rebellion and bouncing back from, you know, living a really oppressed life and how that affects other people. And that's, you know, you're not going to see that until you play the entire game. So you're going to see those themes kind of come through. I just don't know. I want to say that I trust the team to pull it off in a meaningful way, because I've seen them do it in the past. But again,
like, you seem very hesitant. Where's the hesitation kind of come from?
I think, well, the part of it is with how serious the story is, that the thing about Final Fantasy and 14 especially is showing the human side to bring levity to its characters and the story. So you, like, when you say that this is a much more mature story, like, I get it, in like in mature in the violent sense and in the you know, earning that M rating. But I also think that I don't want to conflate dark, like that dark and violent nature. I don't want to conflate that with maturity, because I think part of telling human stories is having that levity and that humanity, which you see a little bit of between Joshua and Clive towards the beginning in his younger years. And I think that's very important, but I think that's also something that I would like to see more throughout the game. Of course, maybe that's waiting for us later down the line, but that is one thing that I'm like keeping in the back of my mind, where I'm like, okay, I want to like see these characters be human. Maybe Clive is just pissed all the time, because he's been through a lot. If you play the opening of this game, that dude has been through a lot. But I think one of the biggest strengths of 14 and Final Fantasy in general is, you know, being able to juxtapose different parts of people's charisma. You know, a lot of characters got Riz in Final Fantasy. So I'm hoping that Clive and Cid, who will have this budding relationship in the beginning, I hope that grows into something. And especially with Jill, I think Jill is such an important character for the rest of this, where we have angry men all the time. But I want to see how Jill gets into the fold and how that relationship grows. But it's all, well, at the end of the day, I will say it's all very fascinating. Like I said, when I was done with the demo, I was sad that I didn't get to see what happens in the next chapter. So I am as curious as ever, but like I said, come back around. I'm not higher than I was before. I'm not lower than I was. I'm just ready to see it all the way through. Cause you know, my biggest questions about the game are never going to be answered by a trailer or a demo. It's going to be when I hit that 60 or 70 hour mark and put the controller down and finish the game. So, but I think, like, if as a longtime Final Fantasy fan, I appreciate that they're trying something different. It is looking a lot like the prestige games, like the God of Wars, I suppose. And that's fine, because I want to see this team try that. Like, they earned the opportunity to try something like that and see what they can do, because I think they're a real special team from my 2000 something hours from Final Fantasy 14. So, I'm eager. I just want to play this game. Square Enix, hit me up, please.
Talking about the cutscenes and the amount of them in the early game, like we talk a lot about the prestige games and how they're sometimes more like interactive movies. They're not more like, but they have that quality to them when we talk about things like The Last of Us. This so far does feel, to go back to the Game of Thrones comparison, it feels like playing like a season of TV, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there is a lot of story that's being given to us, and the way that they're kind of drip feeding it to us through the early moments, then us jumping forward, intermixed with these like super epic gameplay moments, I think really does kind of feel like that the epic TV prestige TV that we're used to, which is different than the movie side of things that we've I think seen a bit more in video games in the last decade or so. But those epic moments I want to talk about a little bit, because I you know me, I love the hype, I love the swell of the music, like bombastic stuff happening, and like new weapon upgrades, and like the, you know, it's me and you, like one shall stand, one shall fall, like all that type of stuff. And oh man, this game delivers. Like, already I'm like, oh, we're about, that's pretty much the point of the game. And the icons.
As all those moments are happening, Tim, all I could think about was Chaim being here on our last podcast when we talked about this game and telling us how expensive this game seems.
That's now, huh?
All I could think about.
It's money, man. And these icon fights that we got to see, which we got to do a couple, and really, it's clear now that icons are integral to the story. Yeah. Like, they are the story. Like, they are the kind of driving force of this and their relationship to the characters and whatnot. And all that stuff is very, very exciting to me. However, I do think that for as exciting as some of those things can be in terms of presentation, that's where I found the least fun so far.
Oh, yeah.
Where some of those sections, I think, kind of where the gameplay switches up, I had there's a pro and a con. On the pro side, I respected how different each one was that we got to play, where I was like, okay, it's not just going to be the same type of thing over and over and over. But I thought a couple bizarre choices were made in terms of, it's so flashy what we're seeing, but what we're doing isn't that flashy. And it kind of reminded me of like old school QuickTime events. Mm-hmm. And with how polished and like prestige the rest of the game feels, the delta of that let me down more than I kind of expected it to, because I was like, I want this to be more thrilling than it is, even though it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Where do you guys fall on that?
I'm definitely with you on that. I don't know. Did you get to do the Garuda versus Ifrit fight?
Yes.
In the second part. Yeah, because that's how I felt too, where it looks impressive. It's these are pivotal moments in the story where things are happening, because icons, like you said, are so important. They are essentially the weapons of mass destruction in that world. And they feel like big, heavy, powerful things that are world-destroying. But like you said, I think one of the ones we did was the Phoenix Rail Shooter-style one. And
infinitely less interesting than the final one, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. And it's it's a rail shooter, so you like target and you press the shoot button,
and you barely target.
But then that's the thing. It's like saying it's a rail shooter. It's like, I think Panzer Dragoon. I think Star Fox. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's kind of just
very
like,
guided.
It's very, very, very guided in a way that like I almost just wish it was a cinematic and like, shorter almost. And just more exciting. You know?
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. That final one, I did. It did seem a lot more interactive in that you were still actively dodging attacks. You were still trying to 3-button combo. And it's like the most basic of inputs that it's requiring you to do. But I still found it way more interesting than the on-rail section.
And when it feels good, it feels real good.
Yeah.
Like with that, there's something to the weight of these. Like it feels like you're controlling a kaiju battle. And like when those moments hit, I'm like, oh, this is really good. It's I just feel like there's like a moment where you kind of like see through the glass on it, and you're just like, oh, this is a video game, and it could be more fun what I'm doing as opposed to just watching something. But I do think that at the end of the day, like I don't know how many of these things are going to be in the game. I have a feeling that once we all finish it, there's going to be some we loved, some we didn't really like, and then some were like, that was okay. But so far, I think that stuff was the least consistent and like least quality experience I had with any of the elements of the game.
Sure.
I would say the game is also, like, we talked about the dark tone. It was just dark to look at.
Yeah, that too.
I don't know if it was the displays we were using. We couldn't, we can go into the settings, but we couldn't mess around with a whole lot, right? I don't think we were playing with HDR or anything like that, but there were sections that were just really, really tough to see what you were doing and what areas you're running around in. It was usually like the interior of a castle at night, so there's not a whole lot of like lighting going on. There may be a little candle that's barely kind of lighting the room, but I had some issues with that. And again, it could have just been the room we were in, the
TV
we're looking at. Yeah.
But I mean, I agree with you. It was very dark. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think to that point, though, one of the things too is, environmental design is such a key part of Final Fantasy. Like, we remember what these different worlds look like, and we have memories of those places. Some weird and wacky designs. And I know that 16 isn't necessarily going for that sort of thing. But I think we got to see a little bit of like environmental variety when we went into the Great Wood, which was one of the later missions. We got to see a little bit of the open section area that they offered towards the end of the demo, because this is not an open world game, just hub areas, expansive hub areas, I would say. So I don't, it's one of those things where I just want to see more of it, because it's very like, dark gray and brown tones in the beginning. It's just, it's a really fucked up world out there. So it looks like it's part too. So, it's consistent with what they're going for. But yeah, I was just like squinting. I'm like, where am I going? Is that door openable?
Talking about where you're going here with the different locations in the world, it's like another Game of Thrones comparison is these different kingdoms and like a lot of characters with complicated names that are similar and like trying to remember all the stuff. There was a feature in this game that I saw us using all the time that I was very impressed with that functions similarly to Amazon's X-ray feature when you're watching something on Amazon Prime. and like you can just like pull up a menu and it tells you like all the actors and like what their names are and kind of gives you a little backstory lore on them.
When you're in a scene of any movie that like that they have it integrated with, you could pause it and it'll tell you what actors are in this scene.
Oh wow!
What their names are, what they've been in, all sorts of like facts about whatever the hell.
And Final Fantasy 16 does a very, very cool video game version of that.
Awesome.
Where it gives you all the information you need that doesn't overwhelm you. Like, I feel like it's always context sensitive to where you are, where you need to be going, where you just were. And multiple times I was like, okay, I think I remember who you are, but let me pull this up. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's exactly what I thought. And let me get a refresher on your relationship. Cool, you're with them. And like, sometimes you don't even need to read it. You just kind of see, oh, your bubble's next to that bubble. Cool. And I just think that it's that type of like familiarity of like, oh, okay, cool, I'm starting to learn this world. And I was just really impressed with that, the way that it looked. You just hit the touchpad and it pulls it up. Like those little kind of details, I think, go a long way in helping people that I think in the past have had trouble with Final Fantasy games, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, there's this great jump on point to remember things. If you put the game down for a week and come back, you'll be able to have this. And then the other one was, I love the look of the map. Like when you pull up the map,
oh, yeah,
it has this super cool tilt shift look to it. And like, we were so early, so I wonder like how much it's going to expand. Cause like right now it's like what we were looking at was kind of like, okay, cool. There's not many like points of interest that we're looking at, but it looked really, really cool. And it reminded me, it was so stylized. I keep saying Game of Thrones, but I love Game of Thrones. So this is a good thing. That the opening thing of seeing the map in Game of Thrones, it's like caring about a map makes us care about the world.
Yeah.
You know, they care about this map.
Yeah. It's such a small detail, but it does go a long way. And that kind of goes back to the high quality, the prestige of this game and it being quote unquote expensive. It's just like all those little things that they've added to improve the experience, to engage you in that way, are important little details. And especially like in that opening, towards the beginning, there's this meeting of the minds scene, and you don't know who anybody are because this is your first time seeing all these different faces. I don't like who the hell is this? Why are they talking to this person in that way? So having a feature like that is really important because you would be lost, especially like I didn't have subtitles on. I usually play with subtitles just because there's complicated names and I just want to see like what that character is actually saying.
Subtitle, baby. Let's go.
Hey, subtitles, man. But yeah, I think those things are really important because it is going to get complex. I mean, I was confused in the beginning too. And I think that's sort of the point where you see this, there's a war happening outside, but all of the leaders are kind of discussing like the future or what they're going to do. And it's all kind of coded. You just don't know what everyone's saying. So, you know, keeping up with that is going to be one of the biggest, I wouldn't say problems, but it's going to be one of the things that's going to be important for, you know, staying engaged with the story.
Absolutely. I want to let you know, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to get the show ad free. For everyone else, here's a word from our sponsors. Shout out to RTX for sponsoring this episode. If you're looking to spend an amazing summer weekend in Austin, Texas, the RTX convention is the perfect excuse. RTX is a gaming, comedy, animation, and podcast festival that Rooster Teeth is throwing in Austin, Texas at the Convention Center from July 7th through 9th. And rumor has it, a couple kind of funny people whose names may or may not rhyme with Mo Trike Like and Loey Moel are planning to head down to party as well. RTX has so much to offer over the 3 days with activities like a free paranormal-themed escape room, achievement hunter, mini golf, VTubing with Ruby characters, and over a dozen live shows with guests like Dungeons & Daddies and Therapy Gecko. There are also evening events each night, from parties to a comedy showcase, an evening rave, and everything in between that can be found in Austin. Buying Ultra and Platinum badges will get you the highest perks, but there's also a solid deal right now where people that purchase weekend and daily badges get another badge for 50% off. Go to rtxaustin.com to select badges and to find additional information. Don't miss out on one of the biggest parties in Austin this summer. Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use, or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think that they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when the actual total is closer to $200+. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each and every month on subscriptions that you don't even know about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors spending and it helps you lower your bills all in one place. place. Rocket Money has saved some of us here at Kind of Funny a ton of money, and it can help you too. Rocket Money also helps you manage all your finance in one place and automatically can help you categorize your expenses so you can easily track your budget in real time. So stop throwing your money away. You can cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Andy, you look like you were revving up to say something.
No, I mean, I just wanted to keep on talking about that X-ray feature. I don't recall what it is, but I feel like once the majority of people get their hands on this feature,
Active time lore is
active,
what I...
Yes, time lore. Active time lore.
I really feel like this is going to be something that people are going to be begging for in pretty much every game coming up. Because it's not only the issue of... I put this game down, I came back, what the hell am I doing? Who's this? What war am I fighting? Whose side am I on? I just enjoy that in that moment. And a lot of games have their codexes and their lore that you can go read up stuff on, but it's just, there's something that I found so captivating of, in this sequence, or in this level that you're in, or in this cutscene, hit that button, you're going to see those three people, and also, here's an excerpt, three sentence paragraph of what this world is and why it's in the state it's in. Like everything was so pitch perfect in that active time lore that I thought was just like, oh my gosh, I want every game to have this from here on out.
It's succinct and it changes based on context too, because you know, like the codexes are maybe like static journal entries where it's like, here's six paragraphs on this character. I'm like, damn, dog, I'm happy for you, but I'm not reading all that. And like something like Xenoblade Chronicles 3 has that feature where they web all the different connections of all the characters. But that game's got like 20 major characters and 100 side characters. And it's a little bit hard to use. But the intuitive nature of how 16 is doing it, I think, is maybe one of the features that games in the future are probably going to look at and be like, hey, damn, we should do that too.
Yeah.
I wanted to also, I had some concerns about this game. I think the last time that we talked about it, I had several commenters, like either in tweets or just stuff that we were retweeting, saying like, oh, I'm not super into Devil May Cry. Like, I'm kind of worried about this direction. And I, not being somebody that's been super into Devil May Cry, like I played the old ones back in the day, but I haven't really like brushed up on any of the newer stuff. I didn't see a whole lot of I don't see this being a whole lot different than the combat that I experienced in 15 or 7 Remake or the 7 Yuffie stuff. Like, it's still fast action, slashing, jumping in the air. I remember Noctis in 15 throwing his spear and then you appear at that spear. Like, I still felt like it was familiar enough that it isn't so much of a far cry from what we've experienced in the past. But again, that's coming from someone who doesn't play a whole lot of Devil May Cry.
I think that there's such a wide gap between how this game feels compared to Devil May Cry and how it feels compared to Final Fantasy VII Remake and Crisis Core and any of the ones we're talking about here. One of the things I love most about this is how the game feels. Like, just even not even just the combat, but him moving around and the buttons make sense. Like, when you hit up any face button, any shoulder button, it does the thing you want it to when you're hitting it. That is something I've been really struggling with a lot of the Final Fantasies recently. Like, 15, which recently is a weird thing to say for that game. But one of my biggest problems was, like, it wasn't fun to navigate. Like, using the analog stick, moving your guy around, then you, like, try to get a treasure chest, and you have to be angled exactly right, and then you hit X, but X is context sensitive, so if you're off just a little, it does something else, and you're dropping stuff or whatever.
That happened to me a lot in this game.
Did it really?
I'd walk up to a chest and hit X, and I would jump. That happened to me, like, at least 3 or 4 times in this game. It wasn't a big issue, but it did happen.
For me, it was something that was, like, so much better than what we've experienced in these other ones that I was like, holy crap. This feels more like a stylish action game than a Final Fantasy thing. And even just, like, then getting to the combat, like, this is kind of the dream that we've had since we watched Advent Children, where it's like, you're like, Final Fantasy VII Remake and all those other stuff, tease that and get close, but those are way more still, like, RPG combat. This is straight up action combat.
Yeah, they said, get that RPG shit out of here.
I love it, man. I mean, even down to the health bars, which I love. Yeah. You know, I think that the UI in this game is really cool, really clean, and it tells me everything I need to know that I'm looking for at that moment. Like, it's all those little things that add up to me to be like, oh, man, this is, from a feel perspective, like, my favorite that I've played, I think, ever, honestly. Like, so far.
Gameplay-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Do you all remember being able to, I can't remember if it was this game or something else that I've played recently of this sort of style, but I could have sworn I saw an option to be able to, like, change the size of the damage font that popped up when you are attacking stuff.
Sure, yeah.
I think that was in this game. I'm not quite sure.
I didn't see.
Yeah, I think you could change the different types of font, or, like, the size of the different types of font that are in there.
Because I know, when these previews first came out, a lot of people were like, God damn, the damage font is, like, it's gigantic and it's really, really overbearing.
Bigger.
But I think you can customize a lot of those things.
Yeah.
I didn't dive too deep into the menus, but for what I did, I was fairly impressed with the amount of options that we had to, like, tool around with.
No
things,
full remapping on controller, but there are two different...
Yeah,
this
control
styles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love damage numbers, man. Make them bigger. Come on now.
Full screen, man.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, they look great. Yeah. I mean, you get that instant gratification. I mean, I think switching between all of the abilities and, like, having that late game kit, like, in your arsenal just felt so freaking fun to use. And I rarely kind of found myself in those moments. Maybe this will change later on in my playthrough, but I rarely found myself sticking to, like, what was working, and I was just kind of doing it all. Like,
sure, yeah.
I'm sure one of the three abilities is way better when it comes to DPS, or maybe, like, instant damage, or maybe, like, damage over time or whatever, but I was just kind of having a blast switching between all of them because it felt badass to do. There's no really better explanation than that.
I think the one part that I think more about is how the different abilities with the different icons that Clive controls, there's a lot of synergy between the move sets. So it doesn't feel like you're doing something completely different. It's like, oh, I can easily see you. Y'all experienced a couple minutes in the game. You're like, oh, I can see how this ability flows into that ability. And I can maybe do this, and I could use Garuda's arm to pull them back in, and I can continue with another combo. So I think they've designed the combat system so well to where, like, you, as the player, there's a lot, and it might look overwhelming, but I think once you get hands-on with it, it all kind of just clicks and makes sense because of the way the moves are designed to work with each other.
I can make my adorable dog knock the dude airborne, then, like, zip to an air combo. Like, God damn, it gives you so much variety and just so many ways to feel great. But yeah. I when we left the event, you basically put out the tweet that I was thinking the whole time of, like, Torgel's better than Turgle.
My boy Torgel, man. This little dog is going to go places.
Yeah.
Oh, like, he's so cute.
Everyone at the event was like, this dog, dude. Though. You know what I mean? They're doing a really good job.
It's basically, for those of y'all that know, it just feels like the dire wolf to Jon Snow. Like,
yep.
That's what this whole, that's all that I could see in that comparison. You know?
And it was cool. I don't want to say too much, but I like Torgel in this game. Going off of what you guys are talking about with the combat and how fun it is to kind of use the entire move sets that you have in this game, this is where I think the RPG elements come in applied to that Devil May Cry type of gameplay that I was so impressed with, where, you know, there's skill trees and kind of skill rings and there's skill this and skill that, whatever. But all of that kind of goes back to this beautiful combination of, I think that one of the reasons we liked the different styles so much is because they were so directly tied to characters and story beats and icons and things like that. So it's like, you fight this boss, you understand their moveset, you then kind of get elements of that moveset into your moveset, but there's all the different skill trees and moves that you get from that, and you're able to, on the fly, switch between them. So there's a familiarity between it that's story-based that I think kind of, like, reinforces, like, oh, okay, I want to do this type of move. I should be using this moveset or whatever. And then there's similarities between moves in the movesets. So it's, like, fun switching between movesets of the different icons and then being able to tech out and kind of create loadouts, essentially, for each moveset where, cool, the square and triangle buttons, I think it was, are your two different attacks. And then you can kind of map different elements and different attacks from that moveset to those buttons. Then you're switching between the different sets. But those buttons are still, you're like, you can, it's up to you how you want to do it, but you can always make square your like light one and your triangle, your more range one or whatever it is. So there's consistency between your sets, or you can have each set be completely different. And then you can know, cool, I'm going to rock this for close combat, switch the move sets for long range. Like the versatility, you can already see. I'm like, oh, wow, this isn't just you start playing the game and you load up your abilities. Like Jedi Survivor, I think, is a good example of this, where Jedi Survivor, there's different movesets with the stances and you can switch between them. But I don't feel like that's really kind of pushed in the gameplay. It's like kind of more like you could, and it's helpful sometimes. Whereas with this, it's like that is the game. Like the game is switching between them actively.
Mm-hmm. It did kind of, it did get confusing at points. I think that it's going to take a while to feel comfortable with this sort of control scheme. There are plenty of moments that you forget that you have to hold that in order to activate this button. And I feel like this sort of control scheme has that moment where you're like, what the fuck am I? Similar to what I've been dealing with Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom for the past couple of days. I also just kind of want to shout out, this is nothing that really has to do with our event, but I think it's really awesome that these devs are saying, we're not going to get this sudden news out of at launch day, a week out, be like, hey, PC's being delayed. I love that they're just like, hey, PC's coming later down the line.
Oh, sure.
That's going to take time. As opposed to what we've seen a lot of is just, you know, the game coming out anyway and it being just completely shit all over the place. So I am very, very happy that they know and understand that that's a big market that they can't mess up. But again, to go back to the very, very first thing that I said about this game, I was wondering, like, when are we going to get these codes? And also, when is this build from? Because it was not great performance-wise. And I still think that's maybe my biggest worry, switching between the two. One of the modes, they didn't even let us do performance mode, and I think that was because it was a much older build.
For the old demo, the first demo, because that was the first demo I played, and they didn't let us switch, or performance mode wasn't available on that build. So
I would say, like,
and that was the combat demo, that was the further part in the game, so that's when you would notice it the most.
And it was, you know, it was, even when you're trying to do all these big flashy moves at 30 frames per second, like, or when you're in performance mode and you're hoping to get 60, but in all honesty, this is not an exaggeration, probably getting around like dips to like 30 and going up to maybe like 45 and stuff like that. Like, it was super, super noticeable for me, unfortunately. And it was like maybe a combination of the dark rooms that we were fighting in, but it was tough on the eyes sometimes.
Sure.
Where I just felt myself kind of like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot happening on the screen at not a good enough frame rate to really like even let my brain kind of register what's happening. So I will say that I hope that those issues are ironed out more than like what we saw with Jedi Survivor recently, where that performance mode was just really, really messy, you know?
Yeah. Maybe it was also a thing with the displays, because I think there's a little bit of like motion blur on the screen.
Yeah, there was lot of motion blur.
I don't think that would be from the game. I mean, like, games do have motion blur, but I think maybe it was the screen just like ghosting, maybe the thing on those screens. But, but yeah,
I think we should have packed the OLED.
Should have done it, man. Like, I'm always saying that, man.
Through with my own OLED.
The tech stuff for me, like, that's like I come at it from a very different perspective than Andy does, and like my eyes and just my experience is very different than yours. So like that stuff I didn't notice too much, but there were moments going back to the big set pieces where like the big icon fights, that's when I saw a lot of like frame stuff where I was like, why? Like, yeah, this isn't fun enough for me to be able to notice like some of the like slowdown, because there's a lot of particles, man.
There's
like,
a lot of stuff
going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very hopeful that that this is the type of game that I do think needs to run at 60. You know what I mean? Like, that's where the real tight action shit comes in. So I'm hoping that.
And in those moments, like, when you are in these big action set pieces, or even just the sort of 1v1 with other kind of bipedal bosses that are like, you know, they're coming at you and they have a big blade too and they have powers as well. I am so glad that this is like PS5 only and not also on PS4 Pro or whatever. Like, that's where you can tell that the devs needed as much horsepower for these moments, because it is... Like Chaim was saying, it is so flashy and it is so expensive looking in a lot of moments that you know that they need every last bit of hardware on hardware that already seems like they are, you know, Sony's trying to maybe upgrade soon or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, I am glad that this is, I think this game would be in much worse shape if it was also a cross-platform title. And, like, how the hell do we get this working on older machines, you know?
Well, a couple points ago, I think about combat real quick is that, so I mentioned that the beginning is really cutscene heavy. And I think, people going into this might be wondering, like, in the first couple hours, like, what the hell were y'all talking about with like the gameplay being flashy and customizable and all that? So it is a bit of a slower start. I think, you are going to be button mashing a lot through the first couple hours. And I noticed, you know, having played the first demo and then going into this new one, I'm like, damn, I really wish I had all my abilities right now.
Yeah, don't expect Clive to like fucking ride a skateboard and a kickflip and then actually start immediately. Like, it's gonna be
while eating pizza. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
my boy Dante.
Yeah, and like the overwhelming nature of jumping into the combat demo, I think the way the game is going to be paced, I think players should be able to acquaint themselves with the kind of power scaling that Clive will eventually get to. So I think that the game seems like it's going to at least, you know, have some training wheels to make sure it doesn't like, hey, we give you 10 icons, y'all figure this shit out. I don't think the game is going to do that.
Yeah.
But I was kind of like, you know, I'm a real gamer. I can do more than mash square when I'm fighting a curl. but yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, if someone plays this and be like, damn, those fools at KF were lying their asses off. But it's like... the game will eventually get there, because the combat demo we played at the end, or that I played first, is that they were giving us abilities that we actually won't have at that story point.
Yeah.
But it was just like, hey man, have fun, y'all figure this out. So I do think that they're like y'all were saying about the combat, I feel the same way, that it's a very high skill ceiling, but I also think it's going to get you there eventually.
And that is something, like you said, I don't think is going to be for everyone. It was very much for me. I really liked the ease in of it, and the jump to all the complicated stuff like that Andy was talking about, where some of the abilities are like, they're not simple hit square and it happens. It is a little bit like, set this up and use other button combinations to make this happen. Some of them have mini games that remind me a lot of like Limit Break mini games and things like that we had, or Overdrives back in Final Fantasy X, things like that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Where it's like, you do this move and it's like, you need to, you know, to the rhythm, hit this thing, or like a little circle goes.
Yeah, Titan has the timing attack to get more damage. That's good.
Yeah. And it's like, that's the electric power, right? Because that's the one. Oh, really? Because for the electric one as well, like, any kind of heavy hit that you're trying to do, you would have to, like, essentially kick a field goal sort of UI. Of, like, like, wait for the power to land in the green spot to really get the most damage possible.
Yeah.
That felt so satisfying to do.
It was
great. Oh, yeah, it is.
And in the way the slowdowns happen and all that, it's just, like, again, the money, you can see it.
Yeah.
You can see it really clearly. But I feel like, with what you're saying about that combat scenario, not... in the final game, we won't have those abilities. The pacing, I'm hoping, if it continues the way that it was in the early game, I'm excited to be welcomed and introduced to each element one by one, so that I can really be like, I like doing this, I don't like doing this, so I'm not going to worry about it. And like, being so familiar with the movesets. And that's why I think, like I was saying earlier, tying the combat movesets into characters and story is going to go a long way. Like, there feels like there's an integration to this game that I am really appreciating. And in some ways that makes everything kind of simple, because there has to be like this like lowest common denominator of like, all right, I wonder who that guy is. He's probably going to be that guy. Oh, he's that guy. And we're so early, but I think they're doing a good job of like potentially setting up those rules to then twist them, you know what I mean, and break them at the right times to keep us engaged, both from a story perspective and a gameplay perspective.
Yeah. And not having a party, I think this is kind of the thing that they give you, like, oh, you don't control a party, you're only controlling Clive, but you know, these icon abilities will give you a sense of, you know, this character gave me this, or I got this ability from this character. So there's still a sense of, you know, I'm building something around the main character there. So,
but here's your dog as well. That was a, I would say, kind of a tough control scheme to get used to.
Oh, because you, yeah.
That you hit left on the D-pad to switch between your dog's abilities.
And your items, I think.
And your items.
Yeah.
Yeah. To like, that was. That took me a while to kind of get used to, in addition to all the other stuff. But that was one thing where it's like, why am I not, oh, I'm on the dog thing and I'm telling him to attack. Let me switch back to the other sort of ability tree or whatever, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I had something. Oh, yeah. The writing, just the okay. quality of the dialogue and all that stuff. Like, I've been saying this a lot, but Final Fantasy VII Remake was like a big moment for me where I'm like, games can have like really like real feeling quality writing that's like fun, that fits the tone. And I'm not saying it's super serious and like, oh, yeah, this is a TV show, but just like there's just a level up that I think's happened in the last couple of years. And that was one of the games that I really noticed it in, especially compared to other Final Fantasy games and other things like that. And playing this one, I was like, I'm really impressed with what we're getting here. Like, it just feels like they're nailing the vibe of it all. And again, it's pretty like, I don't want to say one note, like that's not the word, but like it is what you think it is. You look at this and how should they talk? That's how they talk. But I think that it's kind of rewarding in the way that it so far hasn't gotten too up its own ass in the fantasy stuff. Like, it's not sure. Too like the Thimbley Woods and the Bimbley Woods. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you understand what they're saying. You understand when, even if you don't understand what the word is, you're like, that's a name. That's a place.
It's grounded.
That's a this. It's yeah. And it's grounded. Like, it feels like. Like,
I'm gonna say you're criticizing Elden Ring, but that's fine.
No, I'm not talking about that at all. Like, yeah, legitimately, I'm more like the opposite of that. In fact, like, I think that is like leaning into, like, I would celebrate that game for the point of it is kind of the deep lore and like the discovery and like not having so much the dialogue that leads to a plot and a narrative. Whereas this very much is dialogue leads to development of the plot from A to B. Right. Yep. And I was really impressed with that. Having said that, I feel like I was way higher on it than some of the people I talked to at the event. And I was pretty surprised from most places where, like, I was talking to people, whether it was like the dialogue stuff or the gameplay itself and the amount of cutscenes, I was super high on it all. And then I went and eat lunch and talked to people, and everyone seemed like lower than that. And I was like, whoa, hey, so
snitching on other people.
Well, I mean, they'll put their previews out. Yeah. But and again, no one was like, no one disliked it or anything. Sure. But I feel like I was way higher on it. And I get, like, just even coming off now, I just want that clear to everybody that, like, I am very, very high on this game. What I played it, I'm very high on it. But that might not be for everybody, and from some people I talk to, I seem higher than.
And dialogue-wise, a lady called a guy a fucking cock.
Oh, that was a good insult.
Effective. Yeah.
That was crazy. You fucking cock. Oh my God.
I never heard anyone use that word in that way, but I immediately knew what she meant by that. That was there's a sharpness in the writing.
Yeah.
Characters mean what they say, and they say what they mean. So, like, within all of that, all of this big drama happening between all of these uppity characters who are like the kings and queens of their civilization.
Royalty.
Yeah, they're all royalty, but they're just like a sinister nature to the way these characters are talking to each other. It's so like you'll see like a violent scene and then characters like just being like complete assholes in the sickest way possible. So there's definitely a sharpness. They saw something they wanted to go for, and they really went for it, and they nailed it. And if that's what you're looking for, it's going to pay off.
The last Game of Thrones comparison I'll make here, just because it's like we're talking about the dialogue and stuff, and like the only way I can explain like what I think you're saying that I feel too is it's like the way that these characters are saying things, and you're like, I get the type of person you are in this room with these people talking, but then they like walk out that room and go talk to someone else,
and they're
speaking differently. And it reminds me a lot of like Jaime Lannister when he's talking to someone and when he's talking to Cersei. It's different, you know? It's still him, and it's still written in this way that I'm like, oh, I buy you as a character. I get your vibe. But also, there's layers to this. And, like, that's the type of, like, the quality writing that I'm like, oh, wow, there's something really special here that, like, got me really excited for this.
Yeah. definitely. There's because I know some people when I grew up, they talk to me a certain way, and in another room I'd be eavesdropping. It's like, oh damn, that's what you think of me, huh? Final Fantasy 16 has got, judging from what we've seen in the beginning, it's got a lot of those dramatic moments where characters are, you know, they feel like real people in a way, or I don't know about that. They feel like characters who have layers to
dynamic,
them, like you said. Yeah, they're dynamic characters, and that was one of my concerns going in. It's like, okay, where are we going to kind of get this depth from? But I think it's going to be pretty strong on that note. So they're really going for that style of thing, that prestige drama. And if that's your thing, they're really doing it. There were some moments in the story where I felt like a little bit disconnected by, like, oh, this character should be a little bit more inquisitive, or they should have a certain emotion during this moment. Cause,
but are they playing the game?
Maybe. So, but overall, like, especially in like the story, the major story cutscenes, like, ooh, I was sitting there like, I have the controller down. I ain't touched it in 30 minutes. I gotta like flick the stick to make sure like the screen is dimming.
The screen pops up.
Yeah,
a bit, yeah.
I'm like, oh shit. I'm just like, got my arms folded. I'm just watching this thing happen. So, it's definitely gonna pull a lot of people in that way.
I'm so glad I brought my in-ear earbuds. Like, I just had them in my backpack because I was like, I will not be able to do 6 hours with these over-the-ear things on my, like,
oh,
I got
sensitive ears.
I got so hot, bro.
Oh, yeah.
These big-ass satellites on the side of my head. I was like, I need this is too hot in this room right now.
Staying on the sound, though, man. The sound design in this game is impeccable, man. Yeah. The prestige shines through, the production value. Like, I talked about the music a little earlier.
All the impact,
like,
sounds.
Just to come back to it, it's the combination, I think, of, like, the quality of the voice acting mixed with the sound design, mixed with the music, like, I'm always a sucker for dynamic themes where it's like the same song keeps playing, but then you get into an enemy encounter and it's like it flows up to be big and then it can get small. And like this game, man, it's just like you're hearing this orchestra and I'm like, how is it this dynamic and this like not MIDI? It's like real orchestrated stuff, like with real voices, like with real like the human elements to the musicality of it. And it's bouncing back and forth, interact with what you're doing. Like, it's been done many times, but I don't know if it's ever been done at this level of production value.
Yeah, that's my boy Masayoshi Soken, man, composer and sound designer for Final Fantasy 14 and Creative Business Unit 3, and he's working on this game. And I've talked about it in the first preview that we did, and I think this preview solidified what I said previously, that and as a 14 player, I hear similar melodies, and I hear certain, like,
life,
what's
perhaps
up?
Melodies of life.
Yeah, there's the, if you played Final Fantasy 14 or other Final Fantasy games, you could see some of that DNA shining through. And especially as a 14 player, like the latest raid series, Myths of the Realm in 14, there's a certain melody and instrumentation to the music that plays in the Aglaia raid, which is the only people who play 14 are gonna understand. But if they play that raid in 14 and they hear the field music in 16 for that like little small field demo that we got towards the end of that demo, I was like, oh, this sounds, I've heard this before. And it's one of those, it's almost like an Easter egg for those who love Final Fantasy's music. And you could tell that there's a lot of Heavensward DNA in the orchestration, the way the orchestra and the choir voices swell up in certain moments reminds me of watching the Heavensward trailer or the big boss fights in Heavensward. So if you're a 14 player, there's going to be, or just a lover of Final Fantasy music, there is going to be so much to love in this game. Just based on what I've played so far, I'm already like, damn, man, this is, they're really going for it.
I always thought it was Heaven Sword.
Heaven's word. Towards the heavens.
Oh.
Directional.
Huh.
You know what I'm saying?
You, Andy. Yeah.
I was like, this is probably how they spell sword in like other countries. Yeah. I don't
know. any final thoughts on this?
Give it to me now, but like not right now. But like,
let me play a little more Zelda.
Yeah,
and then please
a lot of
give
stuff
it to
going
me.
On.
Oh my god, dog. Yeah, I'm. I was just saying, like, give it to me now. I want to see how the rest of this game plays out. But you know what? I could wait another week or two, maybe, because Zelda is taking over my life in a way I did not expect. So give me some time. Give me some breathers.
Yeah,
it'd be one thing if we were all kind of collectively playing or getting ready to play a 15 to 20 hour campaign.
Yeah.
Before we try to beat Final Fantasy or try to get Final Fantasy later. But yeah, Zelda is a whole other beast that I would have never, like, I should have known.
I should have known too. But like, yeah, legitimately, it's like, I can't wait for this game. And it is just like, we're just drowning in goods at this point.
Yeah,
like, I can't believe we're here with this much high quality experiences. But I was so impressed with 16 with what I played. It really exceeded my expectations. Like, I was hyped for this game. I've been saying I'm like super hyped for this one because I didn't get to experience 14. But I know how much people love it. And what we see from this, I do love Devil May Cry. And so far, I love getting it down. So it's like, put
this
those
game
together.
Is speaking your
it's
language.
Speaking my language, man. Yeah. So, and playing it, I'm like, oh, it's speaking fluently.
Yeah.
So I like that. But really, really excited for next month for
Tim,
a ton of different reasons.
You're going to be using your back paddles?
Oh, baby. I'm using
this. Is a back paddle game.
Oh, it's 100%.
Oh, the back. Paddle, man. Yeah.
This is
yeah.
a back paddle game for sure.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude. When we sat down to it, I was like, should have brought my scuff.
Yeah. And honestly, for me, it was like, I'm just like, that demo was the moment I realized how much I prefer the DualSense Edge over the DualSense. Like, that controller is so premium, man. It is nice. It's expensive as shit. I don't think I would necessarily recommend it to everybody, but if you're playing PlayStation a lot, if you're playing these type of games a lot, I think it's worth the investment or some similar controller. But like, oh, it feels
yeah.
it feels damn good.
I'm happy for you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm happy for people when they're excited about video
back
games.
Yeah,
so.
Man.
Yeah. And they're $250 controllers.
Yes, exactly.
Use offer code kind of funny when you
mine was like $280 and I bought it and then I sold the other one to Blessing. Because then the day that I bought it, they were like, hey, we got more color options. Like, damn it, I guess I'm gonna buy another one. Let me sell my other one to Blessing.
Got you.
I don't think he even uses it. Jesus.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure as we get closer, we'll probably have you for our review episode.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm down.
Yeah,
I'm down.
Yeah.
Let's
you're,
do it.
You're joining us for that, of course. But where can people find you?
Ooh, you can find me and all of my bullshit at Michael B. Hyam on Twitter. And you can find me at hit video game website, GameSpot.com, again. And we started doing GameSpot After Dark Live again. We're almost at episode 200. We've been doing that thing for quite a while now. So, yeah, gear up for that. Every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. You know, if y'all are doing something live, that's cool too, but...
Rarely.
Yeah, you know, twitch.tv/GameSpot, youtube.com/GameSpot. You know, be chilling with the homies. It's if y'all haven't seen it before, it's a pretty chill, laid-back video game podcast. Me, Lucy Tam, Jake Decker, sometimes Jean-Luc Seipke, and a bunch of other people from GameSpot. So, hit us up.
Hell yeah. Well... let us know in the comments below how hyped you are for Final Fantasy 16, how stressed you are about still having to play Zelda, and whatever else you want to talk about, because we need that. What, Andy?
I don't know.
In the comments?
Engagement. Comment for the algorithm. Comment for the algorithm.
Thank you. Thank
Take
you, everybody.
Take that button out back and start smashing that thing. You know what I'm saying?
All right, love you all. Goodbye.
Peace.